Being confident and comfortable in your own skin is no easy task.
But on Project Runway Redemption, 8 alumni designers return to prove they have the confidence, comfort, and talent that it takes to push the limits.
This season on Project Runway Redemption, the returning designers are here to prove that maybe, just maybe, the judges got it wrong the first time around.
With a newfound confidence in their work, they'll bring their unique creative vision to life through the fabulous clothes they create.
It's all fun and games, of course, but let's not forget, it's a competition. The designers will be battling it out to claim those redemption bragging rights and more.
Can we talk about how this season also features a challenge from the iconic Cyndi Lauper herself?
Yes, it's inspired by her bold fashion choices over the years, and she even sent each designer a pre-selected fabric to incorporate into their garments.
Stream Project Runway Redemption, sponsored by Novartis, now on the Bravo app, BravoTV.com, or Bravo's YouTube channel.
You can also check out Cyndi's podcast, PSO in the Know, for more stories of confidence, comfort, and hope. Visit PSO, that's PSO, in the Know.com. Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast. So, sad news. Real Housewives of Atlanta's Cynthia Bailey announced she will not be returning to the show.
Oh my God. She joined in what? Season 3. That's 11 seasons on the show.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen her get married twice.
Yep.
We've seen Noelle grow up.
Yes.
We've seen her friends with Nene, not friends with Nene, friends with Nene, not friends with Nene. You know, yeah. We've been on a journey with Cynthia.
I know.
It's sad.
It is sad. And I do love Cynthia. Fun fact, she was my first official interview for the podcast. And I remember we only had like 5 minutes and I was so nervous, but she was so beautiful and so nice. It's crazy to think that she's shared so much of her life on the show. And there's so much more to come, but like, we're not going to get a glimpse in that anymore.
Maybe, you know? She'll be around here and there.
Yeah. Pop by as a little friend.
Yeah.
It's very sad, but you know what? I think it could be time for her to just try something new.
Life is movement, yeah. You know?
Not very chill to do this to us, Cynthia, but it's okay.
In other Bravo news, Andy officially revealed Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is going to be a 4-part reunion, which has only ever happened once before, and that was Real Housewives of Atlanta season 9 in 2017. That was the season it was Phaedra's final season, the season that they talked about the candy dungeon rumors.
Yep.
And you remember how epic that reunion was.
Absolutely.
So
I would like to say I'm surprised by it, but I'm not. I mean, no. there has to be, I can't even imagine how long they must have filmed that day. Do you have any idea how many hours it actually was?
Yeah, because I was watching. It was a lot of hours.
Yeah. I mean, there was so much to cover. If you think of even before all of the Erica stuff this season, there was so much with Sutton and Crystal and a lot to dig in with Rinna and Garcelle. Rinna, yeah. Exactly. There were so many things that had happened prior to the Erica stuff. So there's a lot of ground to cover. Also, a lot of romance going on in the Bravo sphere right now. Malia from Below Deck Med announced on Watch What Happens Live that she is dating that hot engineer, Jake.
Malia gets it.
She does. I'm proud of her.
Yeah.
There was Jake and there was one other guy, first officer, I think, mm-hmm. who was really hot. Remember, I mentioned it at the beginning of the season. I was like, I wish these guys were part of the cast. Right. So we could get a little more, you know, activity.
She was getting activity.
She was getting some activity. I wonder if we'll see any of that later this season.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Are you excited that Kyle Cook and Amanda Bettula from Summer House officially tied the knot?
Oh, finally. I am excited.
Yeah, it feels like we've been waiting forever. I mean, I'm sure it feels for them because of COVID and all of that.
Yeah.
But some really great photos have come out from the
wedding. Tons of great photos. A lot of the Summer House cast was there. Luke and Carl took a picture together and they just look so good.
Did not see Hannah.
No.
Do you think Hannah was bummed?
She may present like she was not, but deep down.
You don't think so.
Got to sting a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
She spent a lot of time with them.
Right.
Amanda's dress gorgeous.
So beautiful.
I do love when brides take a risk. I think when we look at some of the dresses that Dorit is working on, they're timeless in one sense, but Amanda's was very simple, but elegant and timeless.
Yeah.
She crushed it.
Yep. So what are we talking about today?
Well, we have to talk Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. So much going on with Jen and Meredith in this episode. Vanderpump Rules is back. Got to cover the season premiere, season 9.
Yep.
And Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, because how do we not talk about Beverly
Hills? Can't
not. Right.
Salt Lake City. So Heather reveals that business is booming for Beauty Lab because, in her opinion, it has to do with the fact that people are on Zoom all the time.
Yep.
And I have to say, I do think there's truth to this because even before the pandemic, back when I was a beauty editor, I kept a mirror on my desk because I was always getting samples. And so I would be trying them. And plus, I was always going from work to events. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to do my makeup. But my mirror was right there. And every day I was staring at myself. And I remember feeling the lowest I've ever felt about myself.
Oh my God.
Because I was just, you know, you're just, you get in your head, you're just staring at your imperfections all day.
You can't help it.
And I was like, enough. And so I took away the mirror and I stopped. And now I think that everyone is experiencing that because they're looking at themselves on Zoom all day.
Yes, I agree. And I am an advocate for no cameras on, which is not how everyone operates. And I've been to meetings where people have been like, okay, I'm not going to be the only one with my camera on. I need a few more people to turn it on.
It's like, you know what? If you want to be on camera, you need to feel empowered to do that on your own.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. Let's all be honest with ourselves. If we see ourselves in the bottom right corner of these Zoom calls, I'm not paying attention to anybody else.
Yeah.
I cannot help but look at myself. Yeah. Call it narcissism. Call it whatever you want. It's just my eyes just go there. And I think it's almost like what you were talking about with the mirror. You start thinking, do I look okay? Is my hair okay? Oh, is this a good angle? Like, should I fix the lighting in here? And it just, you get in your head about it so quickly.
Oh, I don't, and like, I don't know if this is a female thing because it has to do with, but whenever I am about to get my period, I really hate the way I look.
Oh my God.
I know, it's very sad. And my therapist was like, you just have to avoid mirrors. And I was like, I don't know that that's a great, it's just to get through the week, I guess.
That's a little difficult to completely avoid mirrors.
Right.
Like not turning your camera on for a Zoom call. Sure, I can manage that. Yeah. But mirrors, the subway is reflective. You know what I mean? Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by that fact that Heather presented because I do think we've heard this from housewives in the past who have had a season 2 glow up or had work done in between seasons where when you see yourself from different perspective, different angles, you realize how other people see you.
Yeah.
So I think you see yourself in a certain way. Even when you look in the mirror, you tend to, I don't know, perceive yourself differently than others do.
Right.
So when you get that other perspective, it can kind of shake you to your core.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank God this podcast is audio only.
I know.
Okay, I want to point to a line that just made me realize reality is stranger than fiction. And it is when Jen says, I'm not going to steal your identity or anything. This is the second time there's been some kind of reference this season to the charges that are coming.
Mm.
And I'm just like, oh my God, you can't make this up.
I don't even know what to say about that.
Right. We'll just acknowledge it and move on.
One thing I did love in this episode was Jen's impression of Meredith. Because Meredith does have such a specific voice.
Yeah.
And Jen's impression was not like dead on or anything. It was just very funny.
Yeah, I'm super irritated with her because it's like when I think that I've apologized for everything possible. No, Jennifer, there's something else.
Jen has a pretty good sense of humor.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work in her favor.
Right.
But there are times when I can't help but laugh at the things that she says.
Right.
And that was one of them.
We got an interesting side of Mary in this episode, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And how she was dealing with her son.
And really pushing him to join the army.
That is interesting to me.
Yeah.
I get being supportive if that's what your kid wants to do. Like, I think that would be really hard, but I get that ultimately you want to support their life goals.
Right.
But to push them to do it?
Yeah.
There's a risk in that, no?
I think there's something disconnected for her about what it really means to be in the Army, and especially at this time when we've just pulled out of Afghanistan. You know, it just, for me, it was a little bit uncomfortable, which many scenes with Mary and her family have come across that way.
Yeah, they're unsettling in some way.
Yeah, and I just think she doesn't quite understand what that means. And to your point, if it was something that he felt strongly about, he was passionate, he was like, Mom, I want to join the Army, I want to serve my country, all the power to him, because that is his personal journey. But it is unsettling, like you said, to see her really push him towards that. And let's be real, I don't think a kid who has a refrigerator in his bedroom is going to really enjoy the experience of training in the Army. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know about that. Okay, I want to talk about Lisa Barlow. I always want to talk about Lisa Barlow. But specifically, this idea that she really dislikes Heather and Whitney and has all of this stuff against them. I don't think she dislikes anyone as much as they think she does.
Right. I think she is a victim of a outer exterior she doesn't quite have a grasp of.
Yeah.
Because clearly she does make people feel like they aren't good enough, right?
Right.
But I don't think she means to.
I don't think she does either. I think she does have a little bit of that tough cookie exterior, but we've seen her interact with her kids, her husband, her family, and she does often put business first, and that does lead with a certain, people are going to interpret you in a certain way when you're that kind of strong-willed person.
There's like an aloofness there too, right. I think.
Yeah, which is sort of what makes her a really interesting housewife, I think.
It's. I mean, we'll get into Vanderpump, but it does remind me of Lala sort of saying to Raquel, oh, you need to be babied.
Right.
Like Lala has the understanding of you can't take what I'm presenting.
Yeah.
So I need to sort of soften myself for you.
Yeah.
I think that if Lisa could soften herself for people, then it would go over well.
All I'm thinking about is her saying, I'm not going to do that from the Super Tease, where she's not going to text Jen.
Oh, right.
I feel like if she were asked to soften herself
oh, right.
around those two, she'd be like, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
And I'm with her. She shouldn't have to necessarily adapt the way she is according to her audience. I mean, if it was like she were a teacher and she had to stop being so harsh because she had like third graders in her classroom, sure. But it's like they're grown women. They should just, I think, see Lisa more so for who she is.
Right.
I'll defend her. Defend her to the end. What are we thinking about Jenny's husband, Dewey?
Okay, so I have to be honest. I'm preparing for this interview we have coming up on the podcast later. So I had to watch like a bunch of episodes.
Okay.
So I feel like now my judgment of him is a little bit muddied by what I know is coming.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of Jenny?
Fair enough. Well, just based on this episode, so let's talk about just what we've seen so far of Dewey. And I think hearing the way he was pressuring her, now that we have the context of what she's been through, not just physically, like what's happened to her body, but emotionally, I mean, she said that she had 9 miscarriages. That's an insane number. I mean, 1 is traumatizing enough for people, as we see with Sheena and her talking about what she went through on Vanderpump Rules. So with him having this knowledge and this bond with his wife, I think he's being a little insensitive to her experience.
Oh, absolutely.
And we know that he's going to ultimately propose this idea of sister wives, expanding the family. That's a way to have more kids. But it's really coming from such a selfish place, it seems.
Yeah.
I
don't understand in general, because I don't think I have it. I don't have this biological need that some people, I think, really have when it comes to kids, where they're willing to put that above a relationship. That to me is always shocking, where I'm just like, right. You put that above someone that like you're completely in love with? That is so, I'm disconnected from that idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I mean, it came up even with Shaz this past season about wanting to have kids, not wanting to have kids. We heard Reza talk about it at the reunion. And if Jenny is coming from a place of like, no, I don't want any more, they already have three. It's like, can't that just be enough?
Yeah.
Why is that not enough for Dewey? What is it about his psychology that makes him want to have more children? I don't get it. They're expensive.
Yeah. I do think we dig into that later, though, which is interesting.
Good to know. Yep. Good to know. There's nothing like a common enemy that brings people together.
Right.
And in this episode, we see a very unlikely pair, in a sense.
Yeah, Brooks and Mary is odd AF.
I'm glad we have Mary filming with more people on the show again.
I just have this feeling production has to, like, make her.
Oh, absolutely.
I think she's just very comfortable in her house. And then they're like, but you need to have conversations with other people. And she's like, oh, God.
In someone else's house. Like, you have to leave the house, Mary. And she's like, you know, she didn't go to the ice fishing, whatever. Which, I understand that. I don't know if I would love that activity, but it did look fun at the end of the day.
No.
But coming together over this
dislike of Jen.
Dislike of Jen. And I think Mary gave Meredith some sound advice and also caught Meredith in this, well, why haven't you just said something to Jen?
Yeah.
Why haven't you called her? Why are you talking to everybody else about it and not confronting her? So seems like Meredith took that to heart and made the decision to show up to ice fishing to have this throwdown.
Yeah.
And then she's still liking tweets that are awful and mean about him.
So you don't feel to call her and say, why are you doing this? You don't want to do that?
Which I like that Meredith did that, because it's almost like a power move. She was like, oh, it's your event, but I'm in control because I told you I wasn't coming. And surprise, now I'm here.
Yeah.
How do you think that whole conversation went?
Well, first of all, I just think, like I've said in the past episodes, Jen reminds me of Teresa in terms of, I think she's really slippery, and I don't think that you can catch her. You can't catch her and just make her understand. She just has a way of like, whoa, like, yeah. This has nothing to do with me. I don't even understand.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, because if you work in social media, what is your stance on, does Jen have a responsibility for what is tweeted from her account, even if she doesn't physically do it?
Absolutely. And I'm glad that this is finally coming up on the show, the idea that not all of these women are running their social media accounts, because I've dealt with that in the past. And here's the thing about social media and social media management. You know, something will happen. A brand will tweet something, right? And someone will be like, oh my God, promote that intern. No, no, no. There are not interns running these accounts. These are serious branding platforms. And there is so much risk involved, as well as reward. You know, if you get something, you put something out there, it's really engaging. It gets you a lot of traffic to your website, all that sort of stuff. Great. But it's also very damaging and can be very dangerous. And you have to have responsibility over your platforms. It's not even her company's account. It's her name. It's Jen Shah. So if she's just given these people who are managing her accounts free rein, go ahead, like tweets about Brooks, like tweets about this, comment on that. And that's really risky.
Yeah.
And ultimately, as we know where Jen's story is going, she needs to be even more careful about what she's putting out there on social media. Just another example of not only Jen being slippery and not, you know, getting her way out of something, but just not taking responsibility for things that she is literally responsible for.
Right. It also doesn't feel to me like oh, someone did something that's totally off brand for Jen. Jen has made some remarks that aren't nice about Brooks.
Yeah. Well, and it's just in the long run, anytime somebody tries to hold you accountable for the things you put on social media, are you just going to say, oh, I didn't do that. Somebody running my account did that. Because she also went off on Whitney after Whitney's appearance on Watch What Happens Live this week. And it's just like, at what point is this you or is this your assistant?
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
You know, you can't pick and choose according to, you know, which argument you're trying to make.
Absolutely.
Messy, messy boots.
I'm talking about reality. Okay, so reality is, I am tired of like sitting here getting accused of stuff when I have never said anything.
Did you like a comment referring to my son as a sissy bitch?
No.
Yes, you did. Okay.
You know what? You want me to take it out?
It's on your Twitter. You don't know what's going on your own Twitter? Here we go. Jen Shaw.
I'm telling you, I didn't like it.
Well, that's one of probably 20, 30 different comments that are aggressive and hostile towards my family.
What are you talking about? I've never talked about Brooks' sexuality. And what is not fair, I have somebody that runs my stuff, so that is not me.
Last thought on Salt Lake City, bringing it back to my girl Lisa. The joy on her face when she brought up the fish tacos from Del Taco. I just love that she is so obsessed with fast food.
I do too, but okay, there's like this trope that women joke about that in books, like, oh, she weighed 98 pounds and she ate burgers and fries every day and she never worked out. And you're like, in what world? In right. what world right. is that female character someone who's based on reality? And so I get a little like, whenever someone is like, I eat fast food all the time, I look amazing, and I've never worked out. And I'm like, you're a liar.
Yeah. That is funny. It reminds me of Danny was just telling me the story this morning about this new PA at his job who gets a slice of dollar pizza at 11 a.m. every day. And he's like, oh, well, I'm, you know, it's right across the street. Whenever I come in the office, I just treat myself to it. I was like, Danny, how old is that PA? And he was like, he just turned 22. And I was like, well, yeah, he can have a slice of pizza at 11 o'clock every day if he wants. The rest of us no longer have that luxury.
Right.
Okay. Goes straight to the hips.
A moment on the lips, forever on the hips.
There you go. Beverly Hills.
Okay, my first question, because we have a lot of Bravo sleuths out there. People are mining, you know, our Bravo Leb social medias. They're checking old episodes. Did anyone check to see if it was snowing in Pasadena the day that Erica's son got in the car accident?
I think so. I know that there were at least reports confirming police went to the house because of a burglary situation. Some people out there have this theory that Tom imagined it with his dementia, that it wasn't legit, but there was like a broken window and all that stuff. So that definitely happened, you know, whatever. I think some people did see that in parts of Northern California, further up, which could be where Erica's son lives now, if she's left that house, maybe he lives further north. I don't know exactly where he is a police officer, if it's LA County, if it's a different county. It is possible. Probable? Up for debate, I think. There's also one of Ariana Grande's Christmas songs is about it snowing in California. So just reminds me of that.
You know, I will say it is really confusing as a Beverly Hills fan, Lisa Rinna this season. Because Lisa Rinna has always had a history of being the most skeptical of the housewives. She was questioning Yolanda having Lyme disease. She wasn't sure Kim was actually sober when Kim said she was. And with Denise, she wasn't buying anything that Denise was saying. Why is she all in on Erica? Why is she not being more skeptical?
I don't know. And that was what a lot of fans were questioning at one point throughout this season. Oh, is Rinna an investor or is Erica an investor in something? Is there some kind of business connection? Is there, do they have the same manager? Is there some kind of connection that is forcing Rinna to have this loyalty to her? And I don't think there's really anything that's come up. Rinna's debunked a few of those rumors on social media. So I haven't been able to quite put my finger on it. And it's not just Rinna. I mean, we've seen in this episode how when Erica's not around, Dorit speaks a certain way, Kyle says certain things, a lot of the women act a certain way when she isn't there. And then when she shows back up, they're all like, oh, we love you. Oh, there's the old Erica again. Oh my God. And none of them are confronting her in the way that Sutton has.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. It is weird. Because like all of those examples that you listed, specifically around Rinna, were those as justified? You know, there were so many different issues there, whether it was someone having health problems, addiction issues, you know, ruining a marriage, like
right,
a lot of other things.
Because you could argue, well, Erica hasn't been charged with anything. Why should they be questioning her?
Yeah.
But why should you be questioning Yolanda? Why should you be questioning Kim? Why should you be questioning Denise? Like, there is no reason, really, other than you want the truth.
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the day, they're all, or most of them are behind her, but not necessarily believing her. And there was a really interesting interview moment with Garcelle in this episode where she basically said, Erica's story is unbelievable because it's hard to believe.
Yes. You cannot make this up.
Because it was snowing.
Snowing?
Snowing.
What?
And that's very different than the way Kyle worded it a few weeks back, referencing, yeah, it's unbelievable, but does that mean I don't believe it? No, but it's unbelievable. And it's just two different ways of framing what's going on. And I'm more aligned with Garcelle on that. It's really hard to believe all of the things that Erica is choosing to share at this point.
Right. I think that it could only help Erica if she was dating.
Oh my God.
Like if that rumor were true, I think it could help distract from everything else that's going on.
Yeah.
I'm just saying like if I was crisis PR and worked for her, I'd be like, yeah, you need to date. Take your chances.
So, you know, like PK mentioned a few weeks back, who is dealing with this crisis PR? You know, because she's posting all these pictures in lingerie. Yes, she's got bills to pay and all of that, but it's in poor taste given the media frenzy around her right now. Isn't there another well-liked, handsome
celebrity? But I think
celebrity?
It's better that it's someone who has all of this controversy around them because it, you know, then no one's thinking about Erica's mess. They're just worried about her ribs.
I mean, for real. That's definitely. And are they neighbors? Did she actually confirm if they were neighbors?
On the after show, I know Crystal said that she remembers Erica talking about a neighbor who partied all the time and was so annoying. And she was like, and then I put it together later, it was Army.
Oh my God. Okay, so yeah, she should steer clear of that one.
Yeah.
But somebody else, you know, might help her cause.
Yeah, I don't know who would want to sully their name with her controversy at this point.
Like an athlete, you know, someone who's just doesn't have too much to lose.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Okay, I want to talk about, remember the comment Erica made a few years back about LVP being a sniper from the side?
Mm-hmm.
I think Kyle is having some sniper from the side tendencies this season.
Kyle is the biggest shitster this season.
Right?
I mean, the way she just constantly sort of throws Sutton under the bus.
Exactly.
Is weird.
Yes.
Because, like, I get how, Kyle has sort of defended herself in past instances by saying, Erica's going to see this stuff when the show comes out. I'm helping Sutton, just be honest, to her face. Fine. But in the instance of this episode where Kyle's just like, gosh, Sutton, suddenly you're being quiet. Oh, this is uncomfortable. It's like, leave her alone.
Yeah, she's obviously made a conscious decision to stay quiet. Yeah. So let it be. Everyone's having fun, laughing at Erica. Oh, Erica's back. Let it be then. Why make that comment if not to stir the pot?
Right.
And now Sutton's not talking. Kitty cats, meet your tongue.
Oh, damn.
That's a kitty cat.
The cat got your tongue?
Thanks, Kyle.
I want to talk about the word courageous. Is that the right word?
Yeah. Erica saying, and the lawyer said that was the most courageous thing they've ever heard. I was like, Erica, my God. Like, I really don't think she hears herself. I think that she's too far removed from real people.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's one of many comments that she's made, but reminds me of the one she said at that other dinner where Sutton confronted her, where she said, look at my life. And yes, obviously, you're dealing with a lot at this moment. But you also had a glam squad, put your look together. You got a pool at your house in Hancock Park. In the grand scheme of things, and given what's going on with Tom and all of that, your life could be a lot worse.
Right.
You know? And she does see herself in some ways as the hero in this situation. Like, to call herself courageous, whether the lawyer said it or not, who knows? He probably did, just because he's
right.
trying
but the
to
fact
lift
that she
her up.
Believes it, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. That's the problem. And it's just, you know, as of this recording, the episode hasn't aired, but I'm so curious to see how fans react to that.
Yeah.
Because that specifically feels so disconnected from the entire experience that I know fans are not going to be happy.
I will say, just to play devil's advocate here, if Erica knew nothing, she is... I don't want to say the V word, but in some respects, your life is just completely pulled from under you.
Yeah.
And you did nothing wrong. If she didn't, you know right. what I mean? So I don't know. I just feel like I need to say that because, like, I guess there's a possibility that she was bamboozled too.
Well, right. And I think her choice to leave Tom before all of the legal stuff, whether she knew it was coming or not, could still be, you know, discussed. But she, in a lot of ways, did make a choice to pull the rug out from underneath herself by yeah. leaving Tom to begin with. And then all of this other stuff,
yeah.
you know, exploded. It is also interesting that she chose to apologize to Sutton in the moment, but then said she hates her. In her interview, it's like, why apologize if you're not sorry? Why apologize if you hate her? Where did all of that conviction go from the weeks prior when she was so mad and snapping at Sutton and standing strong, you know, in her belief that she's innocent and all of that? You know, it just seems like, what's the point of that? Just so everybody can get on the boat and have a nice day?
And it's something that I can't even predict.
I know, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Oh my God, they're talking.
I'll get through it, but I had to lash out and I apologize.
You don't have to apologize.
But the important part is that we can keep going forward.
Yeah. Well, you're just too pretty to be mad at me.
Shut up.
Erica's giving me a mild apology, but I don't trust it. I mean, I want to, but I don't.
And you know what? I still mean all those nice things I say about you, and it'll take me a minute.
And that's okay.
Do I want to work it out with Sutton? No. No, I don't.
We're okay, everybody. Yay!
Not a kumbaya, but it's a moment.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to ruin everybody else's trip just because I hate Sutton.
It was odd because her apology almost felt like she didn't know she was being filmed because it was like this moment of like, hey, I'm sorry. Like, you know, I had to lash out. Like being like, I just feel like she's so tough in front of everyone else. But then one on one is like, look, I went a little too far.
Well, that's interesting because it would also almost tie back to when she was leaving hiking and she had mentioned, oh, well, Tom calls me every day. Maybe she didn't think that was going to come up again. And she thought, oh, we're done filming. We're walking away. It's not going to come up. And then it came up. So yeah, maybe she thought this apology was more of a, you know, off camera moment. But we gotcha.
Yeah.
We gotcha, Erica. What did you think about Garcelle? Never have I ever stolen anything.
Ooh. I truly don't think she was thinking that.
No, I don't either.
But dear God, Garcelle.
I love that it also quickly became strictly about sexual things.
Right, and that Kathy has done it all.
Kathy has done it all. I believe it.
I do too.
How do you think Paris feels about learning
Paris
this?
Paris is like, this is where I got it.
Now you get it. I will say, last thought on Beverly Hills, you know how I feel about Sutton. She had the best interview moments in this episode. I was cracking up at every instance. She just knows. She gets it.
Vanderpump Rules.
Vanderpump Rules.
It's been so long.
Oh my God, I know. How do you feel? How do you feel having it back finally?
I mean, you know, it's just such a different era of it now. And it has been so long.
Yeah.
But I found myself really enjoying this episode.
Me too.
My first thought was, do you think Lisa Vanderpump has missed being on Bravo?
Yes.
I do too. I just really get that sense that, you know, I think that when you walk away from Real Housewives, that maybe you think you'll be okay with it, and then maybe you're not,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, and there is a thrill to being on set, filming something, you know, putting something out there. There is a real energy to filming something like this. And Lisa hasn't had that in a while.
Yeah.
And she had a rough couple of years. Then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And I'm sure getting back to work in this sense is really rewarding for her.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think about Vanderpump right now? I mean, it's a new era. There are babies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to see. You can almost tell by the new title sequence, like where everybody is now. And it's Tom and Tom. Katie and Ariana are the center couple.
Yeah.
Couples now. I mean, it is a different Vanderpump Rules, but familiar enough that I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I can still go along with these stories and be with these people. And it feels comfortable.
I really found myself just like giving a biggest eye roll when James, you know, comes back into our life, and it really, he's really selling. He's this new person. He is sober. And as a result, he does not lash out anymore. And then Lisa Vanderpump was like, okay, so could we talk about these text messages then? And I'm like, I really wonder if he didn't think she would bring it up because it didn't happen on camera.
Right.
You know what
I
mean?
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And then him saying the most vile things to Max, you know?
I can't believe Lisa wasn't more upset. That's her son.
I think she may just, in a sense, be so used to it.
Yeah. I mean, in a sense, James is also sort of an adopted son, right? Like, she has stepped in this maternal way so many times in the past that in this particular situation, as much as he attacked her son, Max, she's also looking at it like, all right, I have to play mediator here. I got to be the mom and get the two kids back together and in a better place. But it's just like, she must be exhausted by this in some ways.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure everyone in James's life is.
Yeah. Well, that's what Max basically says. He's like, after, you know, all of the years of you drinking and me being there by your side and watching you explode on people and do all sorts of things, like, it's just, it's too much. It's too much. And, you know, being sober now, California sober, as they say on this show, you know, maybe he needs to smoke more weed because it seems like he's still really amped up all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's maybe cutting the alcohol out is step one. Step two is like anger management or something, you know?
Like, you could have just been like, James,
play the victim again.
I'm not playing the victim.
If you just calm down and you actually listen to people, then you'll understand what
he
said.
Well, it sounds like he doesn't even want my apology.
Well,
why? How many times am I going to accept your apology?
My other thought in this episode was, you know, a lot of arguments on Vanderpump Rules are dumb, right? Like, $10 charge on a salad, like split salad. Like, that is a dumb argument, ultimately. Yeah. Like, the result of it is what we should be talking about, but that's a dumb argument. I feel, though, like this Sheena and Lala argument is not dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a legitimate crossroads in the friendship moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is Sheena going through a miscarriage, needing her friend Lala. Lala feeling like she was there and, you know, was getting the clear message that Sheena didn't need her, and then being called out in this public way for not being there for Sheena. Like, this is a real, you know, high stakes argument.
Well, yeah. And the conversation they finally have at the end of the episode, there is a lot of maturity. There is a lot of honesty. It's just a very different conversation than we typically see on Vanderpump Rules. Like, there was a level of control where, yeah, they both got emotional because they were talking about, you know, being moms and realized how much more that they have in common and just how much they do care about each other. But we know Lala can fly off the handle pretty quickly, and, you know, things can escalate on the show. But it seems like this conversation was just showcased a lot of growth with both of these women.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I just expected you to be a mind reader.
We got to get on the same page, because I actually really adore you. And I hate that we couldn't share, like, our pregnancy experiences. And those are moments that we cannot get back.
I know.
And I want your kid and my kid to be friends.
Me too. Like, I would have loved to have gone through that with you. And I was just wishing, like, you were just there to give me a hug.
I was impressed.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it sort of shifted when Lala went back outside and then talked to Ariana, and then things got a little Vanderpump Rules again.
Lala and Ariana's argument, a little bit dumb.
Yeah, a little bit dumb.
Because it's just a little miscommunication. I mean, I don't know. People have different definitions of friendship. And if Lala is saying, like, Ariana, I don't really feel like we're close anymore, and Ariana's like, well, I thought we were, like, that's kind of like, that's easily fixable.
Yeah. And I think this has been a pattern with Ariana in the past, right? People feeling like they're not as close with her. And Lala has felt that way multiple
times.
Ariana
is very much the Erica of Vanderpump Rules, where I feel like she does, even though she thinks she opens up, there's something very closed off about her.
Right, right. And I think she has come to terms with that in a lot of ways. And hopefully through the rest of the season and the next couple episodes, if she and Lala do sit down and have a conversation, she can be a little bit more honest about it. Because as we saw with the conversation with Sheena, Lala is willing to be more receptive to where people are coming from. And she'll still defend herself and what she said or whatever it may be. But I think she would be more willing to listen to Ariana. But in this moment, it does seem like Ariana had a little bit too much to drink, and there's really no reasoning with someone at that point. So Lala, I think, was just, like, frustrated with the whole thing and was like, we're not going to do this
now. I do love watching them fight, though.
Yeah, me too.
It's very fun.
It reminded me a little bit of Potomac after the whiskey tasting, when Robin was like, just four shots of whiskey in and just not willing to really engage in a proper conversation. That was a little bit what Ariana was giving me.
Right.
We have been so surfaced, Ariana. I haven't heard from you at all.
Are you f***ing kidding me?
No, I'm not f***ing kidding you. You're so f***ing brilliant. This is how you want to come for me right now?
I'm not coming for you. You came for me, and I'm responding to it.
I don't give a f*** about you, and you don't give a f*** about me.
I will say, it looks like in the preview for next week, Lauren from Utah is going to meet Charlie from California, and the two of them are going to go head to head. Lauren from Utah is what I call Lala when she gets fired up. You know, when she gets all like, when she gets all like badass and like in somebody's face, like she's, you know, this tough girl.
Right.
Lauren from Utah. Okay.
I'm excited.
But Charlie is someone that I've been excited about returning for this season. And I think she's going to show us exactly why she's here. All right, Rose and Thorn.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
So my rose was, we've been talking a lot about Grace from, you know, Potomac, Giselle's daughter, driving.
Yeah.
And Candace letting Grace move her car?
Which one's Candace's car?
You're moving it?
She told me to move it. I'm good.
Are you confident in doing that?
I'm confident.
Holy sh**.
Robin, like, can you just be in the car with me?
Oh my God.
Just for support.
Oh, go ahead. I have faith in you, Grace. Go ahead. Are you
Who's moving? You're moving us?
Yes, Grace is.
Oh,
she is a young driver. Candace told me to move in.
Okay.
That whole moment of Grace, like, kind of freaking out, but, like, doing a good job. It just was my rose. It was just very funny.
She did scrape the tire a little bit, it seemed.
Oh, yeah. And like, obviously, if Candace had seen the footage we had seen, she never would have let her.
Right.
But it was really funny.
It was really funny.
What was your rose?
Well, I'll actually give my rose to that just entire scene at Giselle's house on Potomac, but I'll specifically pinpoint the editing around Karen and her reaction to the vaccine, where she was just like, everything was kind of blurry and everyone was yelling and there was so much going on. There were so many topics covered, and I think we were all feeling like, whoa, they are just all going at it. And I think Karen just sitting back and being like, I got vaccinated over here. Like, I just absolutely loved how the editors leaned into just the ridiculousness of the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, the location, all of it. Just right. Brilliant. Brilliant. What was your thorn?
My thorn was Vanderpump Rules. I just feel like Katie is once again getting, by her husband, sort of painted in this, like, not fun, like, kind of a problem person. And it's because Schwartz isn't willing to stand up for himself enough to say, hey, I don't like the name Schwartz and Sandys, and instead puts it on her, makes right. it her responsibility. It's just, come on.
It's not going to get her back into Sandoval's good graces.
Right.
I did feel bad for Katie this whole episode because it seems like she's trying really hard to find her thing.
Yeah.
Find her purpose. And she feels very strongly that she wants to be a part of this new restaurant, Schwartz and Sandy's working title. And I just kind of feel bad for her.
Yeah.
I think she's trying to figure it out. And there are a lot of people right now like Katie.
Yeah.
I saw a statistic that was like 65% of people are considering career changes at this point. And it's a tough time. And people are really taking a hard look at their lives and trying to figure out, what do I want to do with my time? And so I did really feel bad for Katie.
Yeah. What was your thorn?
My thorn was the showdown between Sandy and Malia at the beginning of this week's Below Deck Med. I mean, that was a really intense fight. They worked through it, you know, and are back on good graces and all of that. But it was really like mother, daughter, like, I'm going to just say things to hurt you kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they're okay now. So that's good.
Goodness.
It was a lot.
The reality is, Malia, I asked you to come to me in the very first meeting and you never did. So from now on, I don't give a he hits his head, anything. It's a liability, period. Even if it's a bruise, it's massive bruise. And I just, I don't trust you.
It was my responsibility.
I don't trust you.
Okay.
I can't trust you.
Okay. That's whoever this. Yeah.
We'll be back next week with an all-new episode. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, Miss